is performing three concerts this weekend, as is their wont every few weeks at this time of year. Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And the program will include the four C interludes of Benjamin Britten, the vast, wonderful Symphony No. 2 by Johannes Brahms, and the centerpiece, the Violin Concerto No. 3 in B minor by Camille Saint-Saëns, featuring the dazzling 20-something Canadian violinist Blake Pouliot, who is with me here in the studio. Welcome to the Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And like a lot of spectacular violinists, of course, you're traveling all around, but you have settled just recently in New York?
Yes, you got it. I just recently moved to Manhattan in December of last year, so it's only just been a few months.
I hear they've got a bit of a music scene there.
They do. There's a few bands that I've heard of that are pretty popular there. Operas.
Do you get a chance to catch a lot of music, or are you playing it mostly?
Totally. It's kind of an even balance, I would say, that I'm on the road a lot of the time, particularly as, you know, things have started to come back. But yeah, I mean, I would say whenever I'm home, at least, you know, once during the week I'm home. I mean, I moved in December, and I've probably been home a collective of maybe 4 weeks total. With a few days here, a few days there. But I mean, I've gone to Carnegie Hall maybe three or four times. I've gone to David Geffen a few times. I've gone to the Met. So yeah, I've had my fair share of concerts.
Now, during COVID, everybody had to kind of readjust. And that, of course, included the musicians too, performers. And during those years, or right before, I guess, you released your first CD.
I did, yes. I believe it was back in 2018, I think, that I would have been releasing that album. I did a fun album of all French Quebecois music, and I recorded it actually in Quebec with my fabulous pianist and friend, Shinny Huang.
So you're kind of a multifaceted performer here with the folk music and the classical music. And also, I hear you're a big fan of Ella Fitzgerald.
I am a fan of Ella Fitzgerald. I think it's so funny you mentioned that, because that's been brought to my attention a few times. I don't know where that came from. I have no idea.
Really?
Where this idea
is
of...
Is it true?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
something.
I feel like you can't not like Ella Fitzgerald. I feel like it's just, you know, a normal... She's incredible, and she's recorded everything, and I think for me, putting on her music is a wonderful mood setter. But you know, I think that if anyone doesn't like it, I think they should evaluate their own judgment,
because she's incredible. Jazz?
Yeah, I haven't really done jazz. I was actually raised on country music, so there was
really,
yeah, more country
in
music.
Canada.
Yep, country in Canada. It was very popular, and my dad was a television producer on kind of like there was a country variety show in Canada called the Tommy Hunter Show, which is kind of like a Canadian version of Carson almost, but a little bit more variety. So my dad was a producer on that show. So, you know, he worked with Dolly Parton and Brenda Lee, and he toured with Johnny Cash and Gordon Lightfoot. Yeah, that was the music I was raised on.
You have a chance to meet a lot of those celebs then?
I did. I got to meet Lightfoot and Cash, I think, when I was really, really little. But, you know, my dad is quite introspective and very introverted. So he didn't really keep up with a lot of people. They wanted to get in touch with him, but
really?
He said no. Yeah,
that's surprising for a producer. Although, well, yeah, I guess if you think back, some of them, even like the great Brian Epstein, who you know, managed the Beatles, who seemed to be a pretty quiet person. So yeah, all kinds of personalities involved.
Totally.
In the music business.
Yes. Oh, you've got that right.
We could hear some stories. And actually, I want to get into a story you started to tell about recording adventures too. But first, let's hear some of your recordings. This from your CD, which is, I guess it's just called Blake Pouliot. And it's on the An Elektra label. And we got this in 2018. It can't be much earlier than that.
No, I mean, I believe that's right after I finished recording. It would have been in 2018, because I know it was nominated for things and in 2019, and I remember doing that. But yeah, we recorded it, I believe, in the early autumn of 2018, and we finished and I think it was released by the winter, by December or something like that.
It includes works by Ravel and Debussy, and the Ravel takes the form of his violin piano sonata, which is in three movements, the third of which is one of those wonderful perpetual motion pieces.
Oh, yeah. It's quite rhapsodic, very virtuosic. It starts and does not stop.
And here's what it sounds like. And the pianist is?
Shinny Huang.
Moto perpetual, perpetual motion pieces, do they ever sound as if they're never going to end when you're trying to record them?
Oh, my God. A little bit, you know, you feel after by the third take, you kind of forget what you're doing. It just feels like you've been doing it forever, but which is somehow easier and harder.
But recording is a really different phenomenon, I gather, from just playing once in a concert for better or worse, you know, usually for better, of course. There's that whole thing about perfection when you're recording.
Totally. Yeah, the entire experience of it is really humbling and fascinating to challenge your own perception of what you kind of practice for. You know, we strive so long to kind of get like the best take possible, kind of like a one take wonder. But that's kind of our job as a live performer. And once you're put into a recording circumstance of reevaluating bar by bar, note by note, it changes how you feel about that. And also adjusting for the room, adjusting for like the things you've already done before, also adjusting for the fact that there's no one there listening, you know?
Sure.
The audience plays a big part of that. So that changes how you feel as well, you know?
Yeah, hard to get the energy level up.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the interest. I mean, but that's good and bad. I think that sometimes there is a sensitivity you can have by the lack of other people around you, and maybe you can dive into the idea and concept of being really, really intimate, which is something I don't know if you can do on stage purely from an auditory perspective. You may not even hear it.
Of course.
But at the same time, yes, sometimes there's this kind of frenetic and kinetic energy that comes from people being in the audience. And, you know, you have to replicate that at the same time, which is a challenge.
It's probably easier for some works than others in terms of riding that wave of energy.
Totally. Absolutely.
Also on the same CD, my guest, by the way, Blake Pouliot. If you have just joined us, he's performing with the Madison Symphony Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon, the Saint-Saëns' third violin concerto. And on this CD that we have just heard, we're going to hear again the first movement of the Debussy Sonata, which has what kind of approach as far as you're concerned, Blake?
I think, I mean, like some of the great, you know, music that we remember from this era of French composers, I think that Debussy's Violin Sonata really kind of captures the essence of the Impressionist sound effect. I mean, it's just this beautiful, almost ethereal sound going between the violin and the piano, really kind of mastering Debussy's versions of imagery through sound. It's a beautiful piece. It was fantastic to work on and kind of getting my own, really shaping my own musical interests, I feel like, from a young age. Thank you.
That was the work of Claude Debussy, as performed by violinist Blake Pouliot, and the violinist was Shinny Huang, and it's part of their CD that they actually released about 5 or 6 years ago now, with works by Ravel and Debussy. And listening to that again, we hear the difference that the bow can make, you say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so much of the time, and I think, I mean, it makes sense for so many reasons, but we focus so much on the violins. And I think a big reason for that is just simply the fact that the kind of school making of violins and the phenomena that is rare instruments and spectacular instruments, you know, even since makers like Stradivarius were alive, you know, they had a lot of notoriety. And yes. So we've made a big deal about that. And I think that as they've appreciated over time, they've become, you know, they've bridged not just from musical instruments, they've leaned also into artifacts and also investment art, you know?
I mean, yes.
They are a huge part of that. And so we focus so much on that. But what people forget is that the violin doesn't make sound without the bow. The bow actually is a huge part of what brings the voice out. And it's really like spectacular to see the difference in bows and just the balance of the wood, the way that the pressure that's that is placed on the instrument can change the sound timbre and quality, and also allow a kind of a range of sounds to actually come out of the instrument with it. It's incredible.
You're going to be playing the Saint-Saëns this weekend with your Guarneri del Gesù?
Yes, I will be. I've had it now for about 8 years. I absolutely adore this instrument, and it's gotten me kind of building my entire career on it. In fact, this album as well is recorded on that. But I love this instrument so much. You know, I had opportunities to play Stradivarius instruments instead of the Guarneri del Gesù, who of course, you know, has much more name recognition than Guarneri. But I never wanted to switch to something else. I was just, from the first time I ever played the instrument, I was enamored with it.
Kind of a wedding, isn't it?
Yeah,
kind
absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Or for younger audiences, it's kind of like Harry Potter, how they say the wand chooses the wizard. It's a very similar experience of having the violin fit a person as well.
Did the Guarneri del Gesù come with a bow, or how do you work that out?
It did not, unfortunately. That would have been incredible. But no, I was fortunate that a lot of us who use our instruments are loaned them either through foundations or through individuals. And my Guarnerius is loaned to me from a wonderful couple who remain anonymous to the outside world. They're incredibly humble people, and they've loaned this to me. But my bow is also lent to me by a wonderful individual who actually lives in the Twin Cities, who heard me play a concert one time. And he said, you know, I've got this bow that I, as an investment, would you like to try it? And it ended up being a Picot bow that was made in the Viome shop, which for anyone who is a player, that means a lot. To most people, that means nothing. But to people who know, that's incredible. And the way that this partners with my Guarneri just gets sounds and colors and textures out of it that I never experienced before, not playing on a really, really good bow. And it made all the difference. It's just such a dream.
Well, speaking of things beautiful, let's hear Bonsoir from the same CD.
Thank you.
Blake Pouliot with pianist Shinny Huang, and that was Beau Soir by Claude Debussy, the last track on their disc of Ravel and Debussy, which we've been sampling, and he'll be playing more French music live with the Madison Symphony this weekend, the Saint-Saëns Violin Concerto No. 3. A pleasure having you on the midday, Blake.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And look forward to hearing more, one form or the other, whether CD or live. And we'll get to our 12:30 quiz question right after this here on WPR.